How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. I'm Jay King from MassLive.com. I'm joined today by Sam Jam Packard from WEEI. We're going to give you some Celtics predictions to start off the season. We are one day away from the regular season. We have made it through the offseason. We have made it through training camp, preseason, all that boring stuff. Finally, the games are going to matter. We are excited here at the Locked On Celtics podcast. We love basketball, man. While we're recording this, I've got the Cavaliers-Knicks game on mute so that I can see that. Kristaps Porzingis, the unicorn. I'm just excited. Just excited about basketball. Excited to talk real basketball. Although tonight, it's not going to be all real basketball. So we're going to start off with some Celtics predictions. Some of them might be goofy. Some of them might be more basketball. Then we're gonna move to a little NBA talk. Kind of a little NBA forecast, answer some questions about some league-wide stuff, and then we're going to bring it back to my favorite show, TV show of all time, Sam's favorite TV show of all time. He's actually taken a class on it, so he's a little more qualified than I am.
You should have introduced me as the foremost wire expert of the Boston sports media.
I don't know, man. Julian Benbow, he might have something to say about that. That man can talk wire with the best of them. Anyway, so we are going to compare Celtics players to characters from The Wire. If you haven't listened to The Wire, feel free to skip that part of the podcast that's going to come at the end. Or listen, I think it's probably going to be entertaining anyway.
And if you haven't watched The Wire, then you should just pause that podcast, go to HBO Go, and just start watching, because it will change your life for the better. You'll become a better person. That's a Sam Packard guarantee. You'll become a better person if you watch The Wire in its entirety.
Don't pause the podcast. Listen to the end of the podcast and then watch The Wire afterward.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to start off with some questions because – actually, let's do the predictions first. We'll go to you, Sam, for your first Boston Celtics prediction.
My first Boston Celtics prediction is that
We should have had a drum roll there.
Oh, we can add it in post if you know how to do that.
Yeah, I'd rather not. That's too much work, man.
That's fair. All right. My first Celtics prediction is that they do not have their backup wing on their roster right now. Jaylen Brown's not going to work out for them this season. I think he will long term. I don't think Gerald Green or James Young is the answer. So my prediction is that Danny Ainge will make a trade. Not for a big trade, nothing huge, but just someone to come in and play that kind of backup small forward.
Whoa. Okay, so you are not a Jaylen Brown believer at all.
Not in the short term. I just don't think Brad Stevens can deal with his defensive lapses.
But see, I think he spent all of preseason preparing himself, I think, to deal with those lapses. And here's the thing. Jaylen Brown is going to screw up. He is going to screw up. Not just once per game, not just twice per game. He is going to screw up pretty frequently. But he's also going to do some great things, and he's going to grow. And I think he's good enough that you can get away with having him on the court. And he's talented enough that you want him on the court to develop. So I think he's beaten out Gerald Green. I think he deserves minutes. He's not going to help you win too many games just because he's a rookie, and rookies are hardly ever – very impactful to winning, but he's not going to I don't think he's going to kill you either. I think he showed enough in preseason that he's not going to kill you. So I'm going the other way on this one. I think Jaylen Brown will actually play a pretty consistent role. And I think by the end of the season, he is going to be doing some pretty good things. I'm high on Jaylen Brown. I'm a lot higher on Jaylen Brown after the preseason than I was entering it.
Well, there you go. That's the optimistic view, and the pessimistic view is I don't know. I agree with your points, and I just think his development will be more long term. And it feels like Brad Stevens to me is the type of coach who doesn't put up with mistakes, especially on the defensive end. So, and you said he has kind of these like built in mistakes to his game, just given the fact that he's 19. If it's the fourth quarter and it's like 8 minutes left, and you're going through your normal rotation, is Stevens really going to want to put in a guy who is mistake prone? I just don't see it happening. And I think it might lead to him being benched later in the season when the games start to matter more.
I do think, you know, late in fourth quarters, I think Marcus Smart will be playing a lot of three. I think they'll go to small lineups a lot. I think Marcus Smart is just your do-it-all guy. He hasn't developed, like, he's obviously developed as a point guard and he's gotten into a better point guard. I think people thought he would be the point guard at some point and just be the primary ball handler. He hasn't become that. He's just kind of growing into a versatile force. And it's really helpful, I think, to the Celtics while he kind of finds his niche. Right now, his niche is just doing everything. Okay, so I put 10 predictions on MassLive.com. That's kind of my plug right now. Go look at it. I'm sorry it's a slideshow. I had to do a slideshow. Sometimes the bosses make you do things, man. You got to do it. But go check that out. I don't think I'm going to switch them up here. I'm going to go with one of the things that I said, and just so we can talk about some of the stuff that I said. One thing, I Kelly Olynyk, I think, will shoot 35% or worse from behind the arc. And he shot better than 40% last year, so that'd be a pretty big drop for him. I just think with the shoulder thing, it's going to take him a while to get back into it. It's going to take him a long time to, first of all, get the legs. He hasn't played a basketball game or real scrimmage even for 6 months. He's going to hop right back into the regular season. It's going to take him a while, man. I would be very surprised if he comes back lighting up the Nets when he returns.
I agree with the injury stuff, and it's concerning. I think I think you were talking about the other day with when Avery Bradley came back from a similar shoulder injury, his shooting really suffered. My one counter argument is that I imagine that he is going to be playing in that lineup with Crowder, Bradley, Horford, and Isaiah Thomas. And just the spacing there, I think he's going to have a lot more open looks. If he gets a lot of minutes in that lineup. So it could affect his percentage, and that I think that's like the possibility of it being higher. Because we saw when he gets going, there was that moment last year for like, what, was that seven games where he's shot like 52%? He has the ability to get hot. So I think that's the one thing that could kind of pull him over that 35% threshold.
Yeah, that was one thing. I wasn't completely confident in that prediction. I just think it's definitely going to take him some time. And obviously, I think he's the best three-point shooter the Celtics have. And he, because he's a seven-footer, it's really tough for guys to guard seven-footers who can do what he does, which is shoot the ball, and he can even drive closeouts. So, but again, the injury thing, it just worries me. What's your next prediction, man?
My next prediction is, stick with three-point shooting. Marcus Smart will shoot under 32% from three. That was his high. That's what he shot his rookie season. We heard all the stuff about his shot being fixed. I just don't see it. I saw no indication in the preseason that he was really going to improve, and I don't think this is the year he makes that big jump in terms of three-point shooting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I won't be surprised if he's less than 32. That wasn't really a bold prediction, man.
Everyone's talking about his shots fixed. I'm seeing slow motion videos of him in his new shooting form, and he's really tucked in that elbow, and now he's got the hop instead of the footwork. He's got it down. It's just, 32% is a competent player in this league, and if he, everyone's talking about him making the leap, if this is his year to make the leap, they expect him to shoot way better than 32%. So maybe it's not the boldest thing, but it was the one I thought of when I'm trying to compare to your Kelly Olynyk one.
Yeah, that, I mean, definitely not the boldest. I wouldn't be surprised if he's under 32. I wouldn't be surprised if he's under 28. So, yeah, Marcus Smart still needs to develop as a three-point shooter. One thing that I predicted was him finishing in the top 10 in sixth man voting. I wasn't completely confident about that one, but I just think he's going to play so many minutes. I think he'll play more minutes this year with Evan Turner gone. And he just makes so many winning plays, and he's one of those guys, like, you notice everything he does. When he helps you win, you notice everything. He is one of the loudest basketball players around, especially one of the loudest basketball players who's not a star or even a starter. Like, you notice everything. He is screaming at you with his basketball style at all times.
I think the problem is that it's the type of thing you notice when you watch Marcus Smart every night. So those kind of non-box score things show up when you see that he makes the crazy effort play to kind of like save the ball going out of bounds or gets a rebound that he has no business getting. In terms of winning that award, I feel like that's much more of a guy off the bench who has the most points, and it's really a statistical award. So I don't know how much consideration he's actually going to get for that.
Although guys like Andre Iguodala obviously he played for the Warriors and he was part of the death lineup, so that helped him get consideration. But I think he finished in second, so it's not like completely unheard of. And I think as years go by, it becomes a little more of who helps the team rather than who scores the most. Although Jamal Crawford winning that last season did not help the cause.
Should it be named the Lou Williams Award? I feel like that is just basically designed for his game. It's just chuckers off the bench.
I mean, it should be named the Jamal Crawford Award. He's won it more than anyone else, right?
Yeah, that's fair. I just wanted to bring up Lou Williams because that guy had two girlfriends once.
There you go. So
Marcus Smart needs two girlfriends to get some get noticed in this league.
I mean, once Drake raps about it, then he'll be good, and everyone will notice him and vote for him for sixth man. What's your next prediction, man?
First, I want to say that would be a real bold prediction that Marcus Smart is mentioned in a Drake song. That would be wild. But my next one is that Al Horford will be the Celtics' only All-Star. So I do not think Isaiah Thomas makes it back. Nothing against Isaiah. I think he's going to be more efficient. I think his numbers are going to improve. It's just that Kyrie Irving's going to be healthy, and when you're playing on the best team that's coming off a championship and you're Kyrie Irving and you made that famous shot, I just think he's the point guard who makes it ahead of Isaiah Thomas. It's kind of the Tim Bontemps theory that he wouldn't have deserved it in a normal year. He's a good player, but it's not – there are other guards ahead of him in the East who have a higher are people know better, and people are like think of them as better players, so they're more likely to get the votes.
So who were the guards on the team last year?
Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
DeRozan.
He is not an all-star to me. To me, DeMar DeRozan, he scores a lot and doesn't do much else to help your team. Like, he gets to the paint a lot. I've never been a big DeMar DeRozan guy. I respect him because he always comes back better. I am not a fan of the way he plays basketball, and I don't think he deserves the reputation he has around the league. To me, that is Kyle Lowry's team, and that is a Raptors team that wins a lot of regular season games because it has some serious, serious depth and a lot of good players. DeMar DeRozan's a good player to me. He's not a great one, so... I think
that's a completely fair comparison, but I think it's that DeMar DeRozan he's already made the team, and he was just on the Olympic team. He's like already on that tier of players where as long as he averages more than 22 points a game in the first half, it feels like he's kind of guaranteed to be on the All-Star team.
But isn't Isaiah Thomas going to average 22 or more points per game, probably, or right around there at least?
Yeah, but I think the problem is Isaiah is going up against the other point guards in the East, where he has to perform better than John Wall, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, and then he's kind of still in that the competition with people like Kemba Walker. I think he's kind of on the same level as those guys, but I just think Wall, Lowry, and Irving kind of get more recognition than him. So although his numbers may improve, I don't see it in the cards for Isaiah this season.
Another thing that kind of hurts is the vote. The vote might really hurt because I don't think Dwayne Wade is going to be an all-star player this season. I think Dwayne Wade is going to be on the all-star team, and he's going to take one of those guard spots because he's a guy that fans have fallen in love with over the years. And
he's a Hall of Famer. It's if you reach the Hall of Fame status, you're pretty much guaranteed to make the all-star team. Well, I guess KG didn't make it in his last year, but if you're still kind of productive, yeah, it makes sense that Dwayne Wade would get it. So that's that. I think it's not a talent issue with Isaiah. It's just a matter of the size of the roster. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. We'll see. I think he'll make it, and I think he'll make it because the Celtics, not only will he put up big stats again, but the Celtics are going to be really good. I think they're going to win enough games by the All-Star break that people will look at them like, okay, they deserve two All-Stars. That's a team that deserves two guys on the Eastern Conference squad. So I think he'll make it. I think he'll be one of the last guys on the roster again like he was last year. But I do think he'll make it. There are a lot of good point guards, though. Point guard is just stacked in the NBA. It's tough to make the All-Star team as a point guard. It really is. So, all right, Isaiah Thomas off the All-Star team. Okay. One of my bolder predictions, maybe it's not that bold. Terry Rozier, 10-plus points per game this year. What do you think?
I absolutely love that one. I think Terry Rozier is ready for a breakout year. He can score the ball, and he's going to have the ball in his hands with the second unit, and he's a good three-point shooter. He's just an incredible athlete. So I just think there's going to be situations where he's going to get the rebound, push it up the floor. I don't think 10 points per game is too ridiculous. I think I'm all in on this one. All in.
I'm curious to see exactly how good a three-point shooter he is. He looks like absolute knockdown three-point shooter since summer league. Like, he looks like he is just automatic if left open. He's hit some step backs from the corner. He's hit. I want to see how much of that he can sustain. He's not going to shoot 50%+ forever like he did throughout preseason, but if he can shoot, I don't know, 38 or 40, that's a big deal.
I think he's capable of doing it. The one thing that kind of scares you off is that he put up similar numbers in last year's preseason, but then during the regular season, he really didn't get a chance. So this year, when he actually gets some substantial minutes, I think he has that ability. And for all his kind of Snapchat shenanigans, this dude works. He's constant, like throughout the offseason, he's constantly putting in work to get better. I've had, I know a couple guys who have like worked with him and trained with him and said that he is like one of the harder workers they've ever worked with. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's just constantly kind of taking his game to a new level. Kevin O'Connor on a different podcast said that Rozier may be a better prospect than Marcus Smart, which I thought was a little bit too far, but it kind of shows you kind of what people are thinking about Terry Rozier kind of coming into this season.
Yeah, and he has really, really developed. And I think the stats from last preseason were like eerily similar to what he did this preseason. And it's weird because now there's all the hype about him. And last preseason, the circumstances were different, though. Like they played a couple games against European competition. I think he had 14 points, like all in garbage time against one of the European teams. So it wasn't as impressive what he did last year. This year he's been doing it in more regular minutes against more regular competition most of the time. So I'm on the Terry Rozier train, man. I think 10 points per game for him. I think he's going to be a big part of that second unit. And yeah, got everyone raves about his work ethic, like just really, really raves about all the work he puts in. So Terry Rozier. On the rise. On the rise.
All right. My next prediction is that Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and Al Horford will all average over 17.5 points a game.
Whoa.
So last year, one of the things I noticed a bunch was that when the Celtics were playing well, they really spread the ball around, and that a number of players had over 10 points a game. I think it's going to be a little more concentrated this year with their starters doing the majority of the scoring. Last year, Crowder had about 14 points a game. Bradley was about 16. I think Isaiah and Horford are kind of locks for to get that 17 number. So I just think Horford's a good enough to kind of be that multiplier effect, and that offense is just going to really step up in the front first unit. And so I think those four are all going to average over 17 points. This may be my craziest prediction, but I like it.
I kind of like that too. I'm not convinced it'll happen, but I like the thought process behind it. I do think adding Horford to the mix just makes things easier for everybody, and will open up opportunities for everybody, maybe make them more balanced, because he's going to open up chances for the guys who aren't as good at creating them for themselves, like Bradley and Crowder, who are the guys who are going to need to lift themselves up to the level that you put them on. So I like that prediction. Actually, let's end the predictions there because that was a good one. And it was a bold one, but one that could potentially come true.
Who knows? We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, let's go with that one. Next up, we are going to do a little NBA, a little NBA foreshadowing. Let's say some NBA questions,
an NBA preview of sorts, because we're not going to give you the generic predictions of who's going to win the East and MVP, because I feel like those are the type of things that everyone kind of has an opinion on, and no one really checks if you're right at the end. But I trying to come at it with a different angle. So my idea is to kind of, what teams do you feel one way about that it seems like everyone else doesn't like, what's the feeling you have that no one else does about certain teams?
Okay. So yeah, let's start here. Who is the most overrated team in the NBA?
All right, now my pick was going to be the Indiana Pacers.
Yes, I'm on board there.
I don't buy Jeff Teague whatsoever. I never have.
I think Jeff Teague's pretty good.
I think their defense is going to suffer because George Hill was a very good defender, and have a starting backcourt of Teague and Monte Ellis. That's not to stop in any of the great guards we were talking about in the East earlier. Then you also put in, what, Al Jefferson instead of Jan Mahimi. That's a defensive downgrade. And Thaddeus Young, he was the best guy on the Nets last year, but that doesn't mean anything. I don't think he's really going to, like, it doesn't feel like a cohesive team. I love Paul George. Paul George is a great player, but I just don't – some people have pegged them as the fourth best team in the East, and that just is crazy talk to me.
Did you just call Thaddeus Young Thaddeus?
I may have thrown that in a little there. Is that
not only did you insult him by saying his team is most overrated, but then you completely botched his name. I am going to go with, since you picked the Pacers, who would have been one of my teams for that, I'm going to go with the Hornets. I'm not even sure they're overrated at this point. I just think they're due for a step back. They had a lot of guys last year who played career best for them, and Kemba Walker, I think that's real. Marvin Williams, I'm not convinced it is. They lost Al Jefferson. They lost Jeremy Lin, two pretty important pieces. They're getting Michael Kidd-Gilchrist back, which is a big deal. But what made them good last year is they had spacing, and Walker created a lot for them. Jeremy Lin created a lot for them. I'm not sure that the same formula is out there for them this year, and I think it is going to be very difficult to replicate the playing style they used, and I think they're due for a step backward, man. I think the Hornets, I wouldn't be shocked if they at least come close to missing the playoffs.
I'm with you there. I didn't I at no point last year did I buy the Hornets, even when there was just evidence smacking me in the face that they are one of the better offensive teams in terms of efficiency. But I agree with you. I don't think they can kind of perform at the same level. Batum got paid this year. We'll see how he reacts to that. MKG, as good of a defender he is, he's one of the worst shooters in the league. So is he really going to fit into that kind of Steve Clifford offense? I can buy that. I never thought of them as a team kind of on par with the Celtics. So it was kind of shocking that they finished with the same record. So I'm with you on that one, that I could see them missing the playoffs. I agree.
All right, underrated.
Underrated team, I'm going to go with the New Orleans Pelicans.
Oh, man. All right.
And it's really because of two players and two players only. Anthony Davis is a bona fide superstar, and he got hurt last year, but he single-handedly dragged that team to the playoffs 2 years before. I think he has a bounce-back season, and I mean, I used to host a podcast called the We Love Anthony Davis podcast, so my feelings for the Brow are pretty public. I think he's a great player and the type of guy who can basically single-handedly produce wins on his own. And then I'm big on the Buddy Hield. I think he's the kind of perimeter scorer that will go nicely with Anthony Davis. And
ooh, big Buddy Hield guy over here.
I just like guys who can put the biscuit in the basket. When I was about to talk about this team, I had not looked at the rest of their roster, and I'm looking at it now, and it's really making me kind of regret this pick, because the rest of the roster is kind of garbage. But I'm going to put my faith in Davis and Buddy Hield and think they can will themselves into the playoffs in the West, which is going to be a tough task. But I just think everyone's overlooking in that Anthony Davis could have a bounce back year.
Okay, so I like the Anthony Davis pick. I am going to go with – I was going to pick the Houston Rockets because I think James Harden with Mike D'Antoni is going to be frightening. James Harden might average like people think Russell Westbrook is due for this triple-double season. I think Harden might have a better chance. Like, he is going to be absolutely absurd in D'Antoni's offense with all the shooting Houston has around him. I just don't think they'll have enough defense, so I did not end up picking them. I'm going with the Clippers instead.
Ooh.
I think because Blake Griffin got hurt, because so much has gone wrong for that team, people forget how good their starting lineup is. Last year, that starting lineup, if I'm not mistaken, beat teams by like 19 points per 100 possessions. If they stay healthy, they are so loaded in that front court. And once you get to the playoffs, the depth doesn't hurt you. Having no depth doesn't hurt you as much. So I'm on the Clippers. I think if they stay healthy, they're the biggest threat in the West to me, to the Golden State Warriors. And I don't think a lot of people see it that way. So I went with the Clippers here.
I think that's it's a good pick. I would just question to see that. I don't think they're underrated. I think they're everyone else's pick for the second best team in the East, maybe third, but people still think they're going to be good.
But there's no buzz there. It's like they've screwed up enough in the playoffs. They've never made a really deep run, and people have just moved on. So I haven't moved on. I'm still there with you, Clippers. I still think you've got a chance to finish second in the West and earn the right to get pummeled by the Warriors in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think it's there. I was maybe considering it as an overrated team, the Spurs this year, because I just don't know if they're going to have the type of defense that they're going to need to kind of win as many. I mean, this is a team that won, what, like 67 games last year, so it's going to be kind of silly to kind of doubt Pop in that system. But you replace Tim Duncan with Pau Gasol. You have all these kind of chirps about an upset LaMarcus Aldridge, who just like can't deal with the fact that he's not the top dog like in that system, and is upset that people think Kawhi Leonard is – people correctly think that Kawhi Leonard's a better player than he is. It just doesn't bode well, but I'm sure I'm going to eat these words when it's the Spurs and they end up winning 60 games no matter what.
Yeah, this is Greg Popovich, man. This ain't Portland no more. So, all right, let's move on. Which team are you most excited for the Celtics to play?
I'm trying to there's the obvious answers of the Warriors and the Cavs, so I'm going to try and go a little bit outside the box. I'm going to say the Toronto Raptors. It feels like there's a second tier in the East, and it's made up of the Celtics and the Raptors, and they're going to be kind of battling all year. They feel like they're at the equal level, so it's kind of an opportunity to see where the Celtics really are. Are they this improved team? Because they struggled with the Raptors last year. I think they went 1-3. All the games were pretty close. I think two of the games were close, and then there's some other times where it's just they really struggled to stop the two guards there. And it's going to be, I think it's just like the perfect opportunity for Celtics to kind of measure themselves and say, we belong at the top of the East, or we're still have stuff to work on.
All right, you can go with the Raptors. I'm going with everyone's league pass favorite. And we did this thing to be different. I am not going to be different here. I'm going to pick the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think everyone wants to see Karl Towns. Everyone wants to see what Tom Thibodeau can do with that defense. Everyone wants to see if Andrew Wiggins can take the next step. What the hell Chris Dunn's going to be. Zach LaVine doing whatever Zach LaVine does.
Can we talk about Zach LaVine? I saw people talking about him averaging 20 points a game this year, and I was shocked to hear that. So when did Zach LaVine become anything other than like a high flying dunker? I never think of him being like a major contributor to the Timberwolves. It's just, I don't know where this comes from. He was kind of an atrocious point guard last year. They're not going to have him kind of with ball handling responsibilities, but I don't see him doing that much in his second season or third season now.
I'm kind of a Zach LaVine guy.
Kind of a Zach LaVine guy. There you go, you son of a gun.
I'd be a Zach LaVine guy, and I don't know, man. He averaged 14 points per game last year.
Yeah, he shot 39% from three. All right. I mean, maybe this is just my perception, but I'm looking at his stats now. He actually turned in a pretty good statistical season. So maybe I'll walk that Zach LaVine few steps. I'm still not fully there on Zach LaVine, but maybe I'll walk it back a little bit.
He's one of those guys who is so physically gifted that it doesn't matter so much that he doesn't know how to play basketball still. Like he can just hit threes and drive right by people because goddamn that dude is an absolute all-world, all-time freak. So I'm a Zach LaVine guy. I'm a Timberwolves guy. Before this podcast gets entirely too long, and because I'm watching the Cleveland Cavaliers on mute, we're going to move on. We're going to start the wire comparisons. And I don't think I have as many as you. I know you have 10 comparisons between a Celtics player and a Wire character. For those who haven't seen The Wire, again, the greatest show of all time. It doesn't matter what type of person you are, what you normally like, you will appreciate The Wire. It is a brilliant show. It is a great show. It is an entertaining show. It is a life-changing show? No. Probably not a life-changing show, but absolutely the greatest show ever, with the possible exception of Boy Meets World. So
fair.
So we're going to start with you. Give us your first Wired Celtics comparison.
Okay, that's fair. I just did the first 10 guys and what I thought the rotation was going to be. So we're starting off with the starting point guard, Isaiah Thomas. He's a bit flashy. He wants respect on his name. He wants his name to ring out in the streets. He is the team's Avon Barksdale, in my opinion.
Ooh, see, we're beefing already. I went another way on this one. I went with Stringer Bell. To me, he's already gotten some of his territory, aka the All-Star Game appearance. He's established himself. He obviously wants to accomplish more, but to me, like, I see him like in those economics classes right now, trying to see what that next step is, rather than continue like headbutting everyone and like shouldering people out of his way because he needs to establish himself. To me, he's trying to become like that polished dude who can take his team to the next level, rather than that, okay, like completely self-driven maniac who needs to prove everyone wrong. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think there's a difference, and all he cares about right now are like the small details that can help him and the Celtics become winners. So
this is a guy who he remembers every personal slight about him and uses it as motivation. It feels like he's very much worried about himself. I'm not going to say he's not a team player, but it feels like his personal brand, I guess, for lack of a better word, is one of the most important things to him. And he's got a lot more kind of that flashy swagger that Avon has, as opposed to kind of the dressed down businessman that was Stringer Bell.
I don't know. Did you see him in the playoffs? He had the suit on. He came ready. That's Stringer Bell, man. He's ready to work on the little details. He's in economics class right now, getting ready, talking to Brad Stevens. All right, what's your next one?
My next one is Avery Bradley, and he's kind of a calm, quiet dude who gets his work done, and he's very good at his job, but he's not going to make a huge profile. He is Detective Sidnor.
Ooh.
Just kind of a quiet guy who's very good at his job. He's one of the better undercover detectives, and he's just all he does is work hard and get his job done. So it was really hard to come up with anyone else who's like Avery Bradley, because Avery Bradley is like a quiet, kind of smaller demeanor type of dude.
Bodie.
Ooh.
Bodie, because like he was always a pivotal piece. Always, you need Bodie. Like Bodie, I think, was my favorite character. You need him. He is always a help. He is always like company guy. He never had aspirations. He wasn't like Marlowe, Avon, Stringer trying to like get to the top. He just wanted to do his thing and do it as well as he could. And he was very principled, I would say.
He played the game the way you're supposed to play the game. So I would say that. I mean, yeah. While I don't think Avery Bradley would appreciate being compared to a corner boy, but I think it's an apt comparison. I had Terry Rozier as Bodie because he's kind of the young up and comer with the talents who's kind of needs to prove himself to kind of the established system.
Yeah, but see to me like Avery Bradley will never be a star, and I'm not sure Bodie ever wanted to be a star. So I'm giving him the Bodie, man. Bodie, yes, he was a corner boy, but that was a goddamn great corner boy. Bodie, shout out to Bodie, man. I love you, Bodie. So next, I want this comparison is going to make no sense, but I'll explain why I made it in a second. Brad Stevens to Clay Davis, just because I want to hear Brad say shit. But actually, Brad Stevens is Brother Mizone.
Cool, yeah. Calculated, with cool, a plan. Calculated.
I wouldn't be like if he wore a bow tie and came walking in all businesslike and just tried to rip people's throats out. Like that's kind of what he does. He has this cool, calculated, super plan, never gets off the plan. And that's Brad. That's Brother. I like that comparison.
That works for me. And I think if you're going to compare anyone to Brad Stevens, it's going to be tough with the show like The Wire. But I think that's the closest we're going to get.
There we go. What's your next one, man?
All right. Next one is Jay Crowder. And I'm going to say he's cool Lester Smooth, Lester Freeman. Ooh. He's a guy who was in the proverbial pawn shop unit playing on the bench in Denver for 12 years and 4 months. And then he
pawn shop unit. Okay.
And
like
then
that.
He came in, and then he finally got an opportunity to show that he was real police, and he's run with it. And he's not the flashiest of guys, but he gets the details right, and he's a damn hard worker who's he's a key to the system, but he's not gonna stand out. And I think go ahead.
I had Lester as somebody else, and it's probably disrespectful to this person. I had him Al Horford because, first of all, I see Al Horford like making those little figurines that Lester made. Like I feel like that's probably one of Horford's hobbies. Like that would absolutely be him. But also Lester was like there was a brilliance to him, but it was like a subtle brilliance. He never had this like there was never buzz about him. For whatever reason, like, he was stuck in the pawn shop, as you said. People didn't always recognize his brilliance. And Al Horford's like that. Obviously, he's an all-star. He's been a four-time all-star now. But his brilliance is more of the subtle variety. And he kind of does just things that everybody around him really values. But if you came in from the outside, you might not. So I had Horford as my Lester Freeman.
When I first went through, Horford was Lester Freeman, and I was trying to think about it, and I thought, like, oh, playing in Atlanta is kind of like being in the pawn shop unit because no one really notices because those fans are terrible. But the more I thought about it, he was too good.
I wasn't completely sold on my comparison for that reason. I had Crowder as a different guy, and that's Chris Partlow, because Crowder's rugged as hell. He is ruthless. If he needs to, he will beat the crap out of you. But he's also really smart. Like, he's the type of guy, if he was gonna move on someone, he would do what Chris did and, like, sit outside, plot for days exactly what to do so there was zero chance of failure. So Crowder, because he needs the combination of his ruggedness and his intelligence. And that was Chris, man. Chris and Snoop were, like, they were ruthless, but they were good at what they did because they were really smart about it.
I think that works. No complaints here. Also, Chris was really he liked kind of training the young and Michael Lee. And it feels like Crowder is kind of that guy on the team who will Ooh. We see him hanging out with Jaylen Brown and talking about kind of Terry Rozier's. He's always hanging out with Jordan Mickey. He seems like kind of the big brother figure on the team, looking out for everyone else. So I can buy that comparison.
I'm glad. I feel like that was the first one of my comparisons that you bought. And as we said earlier, you are the Wire expert. So I feel like I've failed this project a little bit because I haven't gotten better reception.
No. I think you're doing well. You just you put some thought into it, which I appreciate. It's just you had some different thoughts than me. But I definitely can see the Jay Crowder Chris Partlow comparison. My next one is the big dog, Amir Johnson. This one I just kind of be. This is more based on personality. I'm going to go with the Bunk. Just kind of a bigger, fun guy who gets his job done. He's the big dog. It just kind of made sense to me, and I don't have much reasoning beyond that.
My personality type thing, Terry Rozier as McNulty, because as we see on Rozier's Snapchat, he loves to enjoy the night. He goes out. He occasionally takes Snapchats of himself at concerts, other places that are less likely to please the organization than concerts. But he also, when he gets to work, he goes to work. And McNulty was seen during the day as one of the most talented detectives. He was just really great at what he did when he wanted to be. And Rozier, he's not at the McNulty level yet with his work, but he's getting closer. 10 points per game this year, man. 10 plus.
I'm with you on that one. 10 points per game. But my Jimmy McNulty was Marcus Smart, because he's a damn good police. He cares about the work, but his methods of getting there are not normal, and people generally don't like what he does. So I was just thought of Marcus Smart and kind of the flopping and stuff like that, and his reputation around the league and his ability to piss other people off. I feel like that's a very Jimmy McNulty quality, but you can never deny that he doesn't care and that he is putting all that he has into the game, which I feel like lines up well with Marcus Smart. But I can see the thing is, when you're doing each player, it's tough to compare their, are we comparing their off the court personality or comparing what their game is like? So this is really not an exact science, as you may have already determined, but I can buy Jimmy McNulty as either Rozier or Marcus Smart.
I like Smart, too, because Smart, if it came down to it, he would absolutely fake murders. He would fake a string of murders because he's Marcus Smart, man. Whatever it takes. Marcus Smart, Jimmy McNulty. I like that. I'm all aboard the Marcus Smart, Jimmy McNulty. I wish I'd said that myself.
All right, you got any more, or should I keep going with my list?
Keep going, man. I think I'm pretty much done.
All right. Next, I'm going to go with – this one is just one of the lazier ones I did, but Jonas Jerebko is Sergei.
I like it. Can James Young be Ziggy?
James Young is absolutely Ziggy, the young guy with a kind of the problems, although you might say RJ Hunter is Ziggy now that he's cut, but James Young seems to be the kind of the more emotional guy from the Ducks. I would buy that one.
Yeah, and like Crowder's kind of like his cousin, Ziggy's cousin, like just look at him like, Zig, what are you doing, man? I kind of like the Ziggy. That's one of the most insulting things I've ever said about anyone, is comparing them to Ziggy. So
Ziggy's never tried for earned anything in his life, so it kind of makes sense.
I feel bad about that one, though. I do feel bad.
All right, this next one's going to be very controversial.
Uh-oh.
Kelly Olynyk is Bubbles.
Explain it to me.
All right.
So I'm not there right now.
Everyone loves Bubbles. He's a likable guy. He has people know him both in the police department and the community. Generally, people like him. Kelly Olynyk's like kind of one of the most well-liked guys in the Celtics locker room. It seems like he has friends all across the league. They're both kind of dirty, and they both have a fundamental problem. One is one's addicted to heroin, and one is very, very hesitant when he shoots. And it was unwilling to be aggressive when trying to score the basketball. And it's both an addiction that's plaguing their life. And until they solve this problem, it's going to be really hard for them to progress.
This one was a little – I would say you took some liberties in this comparison. When you are comparing heroin to up fakes at the three-point arc, you might be, as I said, taking some liberties there. This I don't think this was your best comparison, but I admire the artistic way you approached it.
I thank you. I mean, I went to a liberal arts college. They taught me to think outside the box. So I think this one would definitely. It was tough coming up with one for Kelly Olynyk, and I thought Bubs might work for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bold call. Bold call.
All right, I have two more. We already talked about Al Horford. I'm going to give him the Lieutenant Daniels. He's the kind of the wise old vet who's a natural leader, and kind of he doesn't show you immediately that he's kind of the one pulling all the strings. But when it comes through in the end, he's the kind of the good character who will fight for you in the end, and it will end up making all the difference.
I like that. I like it.
That's kind of a basic one. And then to wrap it all up, I'm going with Jaylen Brown is Michael Lee. He's the young guy with loads of potential, and it's we haven't seen him kind of develop it yet or put everything together, but you can see that it's there, and he has that that ability where in the future he can be the guy.
I'm still waiting for a sixth season of The Wire with Michael Lee as the new Omar.
I think we all are. I think it's.
I need that. Like right now, it's a somewhat perfect series. Like there were some flaws. The whole McNulty murder thing was wild. In season five. Season five got a little crazy.
Yeah, for a show that's supposed to be one of the like most hyper-realistic shows out there, that one, that wasn't my favorite choice. But other than that, it's pretty flawless.
Yeah, we're waiting on season six, just like we're waiting on the regular season. Celtics versus Nets, Wednesday night, basketball that counts, is finally here. The Celtics... I've got them winning 53 games.
That was going to be one of my predictions. Is I have them winning 55 games.
Ooh, 55. That's a lot of wins, but we'll go with it. All right. So you got 55. I got 53. For all those out there, just keep listening to us, please. Keep listening to us. Follow us on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, whatever else. wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating if you can.
If you have any problems with our wire rankings or our bowl predictions, leave it in a 5-star rating. We'll read it on the air. As long as you give us that 5-star rating on iTunes, we can read your opinion on the air.
Yep. Or you could tweet it to us, hashtag RaininJays, RaininJs. That's who we are. We're the RaininJays. We are the Locked On Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.